What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Clock Radio Speakers. I'm your host, Armand. You can follow me on Twitter at Armand, A-R-M-O-N-D, wake up, all one word. Facebook.com/Clock Radio Speakers. ClockRadioSpeakers.com is powered by Tumblr. So if you have Tumblr, you can follow us there, share all the episodes there. Of course, we are on iTunes. Please vote, rate, comment, all that great stuff. And our official Twitter handle is at CRS Podcast. Also use the hashtag Clock Radio Speakers. And every Sunday night, 10 p.m. to 12 a.m., thepulse-radio.com. You can listen to us play whatever we feel like playing for 2 hours. So,
That's pretty accurate. That's pretty accurate.
Yeah, okay. I think I got everything. What's up, man?
What's going on, everybody? You can follow me on Twitter at @doc_beats, S not a Z. I think you got all the normal things.
Yeah, I think I'm good. I think I got that. It was a little rough like the last 2 weeks, you know what I'm saying? Like I didn't get the routine right, you know what I'm saying? So I wanted to make sure that I jumped right back in the pool.
But you made it very clear this time that it wasn't just another episode. So I noticed you switching that up. You're trying to keep it fresh, man, for the people.
I should have vined us doing Clock Radio Speakers. I'm bugging.
Man, you took to that like you're all over that.
Oh yeah.
Now that they let the Android people in the building.
Oh yeah. Who let the dogs out? We are in the building. It's your boys. So yeah, Vine is dope. It's weird because now I get bored on Instagram. Like, these are just pictures. You're not moving. You're just sitting there. So
yeah, as soon as I saw you say that on Twitter, my brain, probably because we had just, paid attention to what Papoose did. I kept trying to construct like a Papoosean punchline about Instagram.
We should have like a contest or something.
Everybody, please use the hashtag Clock Radio Speakers and tell us your most Papoosean punchlines. We're definitely talking Papoose this week.
Absolutely.
Talking Summer Jam in general.
Greatest moment in hip hop history. Ever.
That's an interesting definition of the word great.
Life-changing. You have no, like, when we get there, I'll tell you about my story. Like, watching that live was just, I'll never be able to replicate that again. I mean, my kids graduate high school and college, getting married. All doesn't hold a candle to seeing Papoose.
Did you
crash the Summer Jam stage?
We're going to get into that.
Okay. Let's get into other stuff first.
We're basically following up on what we talked about last episode, which is the dream.
Yeah.
So we got the first official.
Yep.
22K.
Yep.
It's all right. It's not great.
No, I mean, by all intents and purposes, artists on Def Jam, pretty well-known guy with really notable hit singles. 22K is like,
is he well known? This is an interesting concept to me.
I listened to last week's episode, Doc, and you said that Dream was an artist who thought that he was bigger than what he really was, and you never elaborated on that. So I think here's a chance for you to do so.
So I should elaborate on that. What I mean by that is he clearly has a rep in the industry for being, and he a well deserved rep for being a hit maker. From the writing and the production side. But as a solo artist, he's never had a smash single that is anywhere close to what he's done when he's behind the boards or writing. So
he did a podcast with Juan Epstein, so which is like another variation of they kind of bit off of Clock Radio Speakers.
I doubt that they heard ours first, but we can say that. I mean,
I will. Oh, I will. but he kind of talked about, he understands his limitations as an artist, and he said he really doesn't like to perform, which kind of validates our theory of him as a stage performer. He said he doesn't feel bad about giving away some of his bigger records to other artists who can perform the record and bring it to life where maybe he couldn't.
Yeah, so if you look at his records traditionally, they often feature like three or four song sequences that all flow within one another. He mm-hmm. has songs that can be really long. For somebody who makes his, I mean, and when you listen to the Juan Epstein show, I haven't listened to it all the way through, but he talks about how much money he's gotten from some of these, you know.
Yeah.
I'm using classic, not in like a hip hop way, but like classic pop records in a modern 2000 sort of way, right? Like yeah. the money he got and continues to get from Umbrella is incredible.
Yeah.
So here's somebody who knows how to craft a pop hit, and yet when he's releasing records, he's, you know, he's got these long, meandering, like 8-minute slow jams with five different parts.
Well, maybe it's because an artist like Beyonce, Rihanna, that he or Justin Bieber that he's made records for, can't, like, can you imagine anybody else singing Fancy?
No. Please don't get me wrong. I love that stuff. However, that's not, like, when he's putting that stuff on his records, that's not for the mass market. He's appealing to a niche, and that's fine.
Right.
But on the other hand, when you appeal to a niche and when you knowingly give away some of your bigger records, then what could you really expect from the Dream in terms of sales then? I would say that in this album, we talked about it, but the ones that are quote unquote the most radio accessible really aren't even the best ones. Most of them, when they're quote unquote radio accessible, really just feature big name artists, people who he's done work with over the years. Not necessarily songs that are radio ready because they're great. They just happen to sort of feature big names, and that sort of seems to be the strategy.
Yep.
So to me, if you were to take away, and I realize it's difficult when talking about the Dream, but if you were to take away his non-solo work and just evaluate his career from that point, he would be a well-respected, I want to say the equivalent of an underground hip-hop artist, but like, no, really. I mean, it's niche work in 2013. It's traditionally excellent work.
Sure.
But it's not pop work.
Right.
His own work is most of the time it's not pop. So no. I mean, in terms of record sales, I don't judge him that way. Like no. The Dream as a behind the scenes producer has a very different rep than The Dream as a solo artist.
Yeah.
And he doesn't go tour.
No, I mean, he does. Yeah. I mean, he's toured. I guess this last tour was it Love King? It was 1977. I think that was the first time where I actually, maybe it's the first time I actually paid attention to him going on tour. But I've never heard of anybody up until recently saying, yo, I'm about to go to a Dream concert. Unless it was, you know, the four white girls with Puff.
And what's interesting is, like, he could actually, you know, if he wanted to, at his own, like, when he's doing a show, not only could he do his own solo stuff, but he could do the songs that he's written for other people. Like, I've certainly, like, I've got, you know, his original version of Umbrella or his original version of, you know, Bed. Like, they a Bed, yeah, right? I mean, this stuff floats around, so you know, a lot of the stuff there exists a recorded version. Like, he clearly knows how to sing these songs that he writes. Like, I've seen artists who do stuff like that when they're on tour. If they've written for somebody big, they'll perform that as, like, a little, hey, yeah. If you just casually showed up to a Dream concert, you might not know who I am. Like, give them the whole experience. Like, there's a way around that, but that's not his focus.
Nah.
So, like, when we talk about 22K, like, yeah, he's on Def Jam, but I don't know.
I mean, there was no single. I mean, even on top of what you're saying, because you're absolutely right, there's no single. There was really not a whole lot of push behind it. He dropped Memorial Day weekend. Like, there's a lot of factors where you're like, all right. Because now, obviously for Def Jam and for a lot of labels, you can tell, like, it's funny. Most of the big dogs come out fourth quarter. Like, now you've got a rush of reputable artists that are about to make music.
I was going to say, it seems like the summer is the new time.
Yeah, the summer's the new time. You've got June. You've got Mariah Carey just announced she's dropping July 23rd.
That's interesting.
You know, so, yeah, on top of, you know, what we've talked about this week, yeah, it seems like this is what... I don't know, you think they're trying to make that Grammy?
I think the fourth quarter has gotten so crowded that I think it almost becomes So like with movies, and I'm just wildly speculating here, but this might make sense. With movies, what happens is years in advance, like they're making these movies. So studios will announce, oh, I've got this weekend.
Yeah.
Right. So they carve out space. So that becomes like, oh, like, you know, so what, like in a week and a half, the new Superman movie comes out. They've known that that movie comes out on that weekend for like 18 months. They claim that weekend a while ago.
Yeah.
Right. And they do that in part to sort of say, we're going to be a big deal. So everybody else, you go find your own weekend. And there are exceptions. There are times where there's either it's too big of a weekend. If it's like a holiday weekend, those are really tempting for movies to try to like different studios will put big releases. Or if you're doing a counter programming thing. So if it's like a comedy versus an action, like you can probably get away with two roughly big movies. But if it's when it's one of these like really big movies, like Iron Man, that was the only big movie that dropped that weekend.
Yeah.
Right. So what I think might be sort of happening is, you know, when you get to fourth quarter, especially if you're in, say, the second half of November in through December, it's crazy. On one hand, yeah, you're benefiting from people doing their holiday shopping, but it's so hard to stand out. Whereas now, like, you know, Mariah announces July 23rd, with the exception of some counter programming, you know, she just claimed that weekend. Right? There might be a little bit of that going on.
I agree with that. I agree with that.
The other thing I'll say is the other way to go about it is, you know, you could take the J. Cole approach, right? Where he saw that Kanye claimed the weekend. Then he's like, no, I'm going after that weekend. And now I'm going to talk about the fact that I'm on the same weekend as Kanye.
Yep.
Right? That approach works. Like there's something to be said for picking a time of year where it's not just we got to get these out before the end of the year.
Yep.
I think there's something to be said for that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, so as I think about that, I kind of think about, you know, who is going to drop in the fourth quarter this year? I mean, at the end of the Dream podcast, he pretty much announces that Jay's going to release a single with him on it for his album. So, you know, and then Nicki Minaj, who we'll talk about a little later, she has said that she's going back to her roots, her rappity rap roots on her new album. I'm assuming that both of those are going to drop this year.
Yeah. And Nicki's an obvious candidate for that later, that second half of November time period. That's her. That's traditionally her time.
Yeah.
Jay could be anytime fourth quarter, except September.
Yeah, September. If I was to just guesstimate with Jay, I'm going to go with September.
I could see September. He's done September before. But, November, yes. You know, he's done November as well.
Yeah. Blueprint 4? I'm joking.
No, I think you're about right there. I think Blueprint 4 is probably the way to go. What? No, I know. Blueprint 3, whatever, like Blueprint as a brand, originally to me, what it represented was, oh, I'm doing soul sampling.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And even Blueprint 2, I mean, there was a lot of that on there. Like that was like, whether rightly or wrongly, me as a music nerd, that's what I always associated. So Blueprint 3, I was like, yeah, I'm not really sure what's going on there. Mm-hmm. But I think at this point, it's much like the Carter series is for Wayne, right? Where that's just the name that you go back to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think that's Jay's thing. I think he's pretty traditional with those sort of things. You know, he's got a brand. He'll stick with it.
I agree. I don't want to agree. I don't want a Blueprint 4. But then again, you know, I could care less about a Jay-Z album in 2013. So
I wouldn't say I could care less. Like,
okay, well, I'm not excited. I can't wait till it comes out. Of course, I'm going to listen to it. I'm going to buy into the little hype or whatever. But, you know, I'm not expecting American Gangster 2, you know. I expect, you know.
Now, wouldn't that be an interesting brand?
That would be. He won't do it.
He won't do
that. He won't do it. Because that sounds not in, you know. Trent Hop and Jay.
I mean, it wasn't in at the time either. You call him trend hopping Jay.
2007.
But let me tell you, Puff was sitting on those beats forever.
Yes, he was.
Nobody else wanted them. Oh, but by the way, once Jay did American Gangster, you saw a ton of New York rappers go out and buy beats just like that.
Though Sean C and Elfie had a little run.
That's right.
So
Jay the trend hopper.
But let me say this though. Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
who has the budget to get some of those beats though? Because Fab's Loso's Way was a poor attempt of a recreation of American Gangster. Like those are like C beats.
Yeah.
But who's gonna get that A level production? Everything that Puff did to that app, because Puff, and as much as we talk about Puff, I don't think Puff gets enough credit for his producer work. In the podcast, they talk about what a producer is, and they identify the
Dream podcast, right?
Yes, the Dream podcast. Yep, they talk about the differences between DJ Premier is a producer and Puff is a producer, but they're still a producer. One isn't more important than the other. You know what I'm saying? So, what Puff did to that American Gangster album, I don't believe he gets the credit that he deserves for that.
Yeah, I guess I would agree with that.
That album, it doesn't sound the way that it sounds without Puff.
No.
At all.
No, but on the other hand, I mean, I don't think you can divorce Jay from the credit for how that album sounds either.
No, not at all. Because I think he wrapped his behind off on that album. He pulled off the concept of American Gangster to go with the movie very well. Yeah. I just hate that he hid behind the movie. Just do it. Just do Reasonable Doubt 2.
Yeah, but see, by hiding behind the movie, he gets to not call it Reasonable Doubt 2.
Yeah.
Which would bring a whole other level of stuff. Like, it's weird. He can go back to that Blueprint brand as long as he wants. But as soon as he goes back to Reasonable Doubt 2, all of a sudden, he's in the Noriega Raekwon stage of his career. When you have the classic debut and you come back with the sequel, like you put the number 2 after it, you might as well just say, Radio, you can ignore me. I'm going to be doing club shows in the tri-state area for the next 3 years.
Or do or put a still in front of it?
Well.
Ba-dum-psh.
Stillmatic, yeah.
Was Stillmatic the best? What was the best sequel album?
The best sequel album?
Was it Stillmatic?
Well, I don't think Stillmatic's a very good album.
The first half of Stillmatic is very good. The second half is not good at all.
Now you're going to make me look this up.
The Stillmatic intro.
Good, but not incredible.
I agree with that.
Ether's
horrible.
Got Yourself a Gun.
It's cool.
Smoking. You're the Man.
Dope.
Rewind. One Mic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Second Childhood. Dope.
Yes.
Destroy and Rebuild.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Flyest. That's nice.
Yeah.
Braveheart Party.
Who was that? Somebody said on Twitter they were humming Braveheart Party. Like you know the words to Braveheart Party? All I remember is like the little, what was that noise? And was it like a Spanish guitar, like a tambourine or something?
Rule.
Oh, yeah.
My Country. All right. What Goes Around.
Dope. Right.
But you notice there was a lot of in that.
There was a lot of
Let's not call that a great album, okay?
All right.
So,
I mean, what do we have? So we've got Stillmatic. We've got Cubalinks 2. We've got War Report 2.
Oh, God. Would you call 2001 a sequel?
Yeah.
There you go. That's got it. That's it. If that's not it, that's got to be. Because it certainly isn't Blueprint 2. Like, let's be really honest. Wait, would you consider? Well,
I would still consider Blueprint 3 a part of it. I wouldn't say that was the best.
What about the Volume series?
I don't know. I mean, but see me, I'm not a big fan of the Volumes.
I think Volume 3 is really good. I think Volume 3 is up there for Jay. I know it doesn't get nearly enough. I mean, it's Timbo in his prime. I know.
Yeah, because I mean, it's Hot as one of Timbo's best beats. I give you that.
There's a lot of.
What about?
No, I think you might. 2001 might be it.
500 Degrees.
Now you're just being funny.
600 Degrees. You remember that Juvenile dropped 600 Degrees?
Yeah,
it was beefing.
Anyway. All right. So we went from the Dream to we segued into Jay. Anything else we want to say about the Dream?
Nah, we can go into J. Cole since talking about Jay.
You want to talk? Okay. Yeah, this J. Cole track list.
Yeah.
Well, first, we want to talk about this the single.
Yeah, let's talk the TLC single.
J. Cole featuring TLC, Crooked Smile.
Yep.
It's a nice little summer single.
Can I be nitpicky and say I hate the drums?
can I be nitpicky and say, my goodness, could he jock 2004 Kanye any harder? That's right. I'm bringing back that word jock. No, the horror of this song. He might as well just get the backpack with the bear. Like, he has just airlifted that aura from 9 years ago.
He said jetpacked. Yeah, I agree. This is very that's what it was. Thank you for saying that. That was my problem with the song. It felt like something I had heard before.
But I'll give him credit for that. I mean,
but that wasn't in a good way.
Okay.
That wasn't in a good way. And I guess maybe I don't think that here's my problem with the song. You know, it's a positive song, great. You know, could this possibly be a hit record? I could see this getting spins on the radio. My problem is, as a 90s head, he didn't utilize Chili at all. Chili's supposed to have her own breakdown. Where's her 8-bar baby, 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 I can have any man I want to bridge? Where's that at? All I heard was T-Boz. Because that was a sample on the record, right? Well, okay, so where's Chili at?
Wait, is that a sample on the record? Did he bring him in at all?
I thought it, unless he sampled Chili, it felt like a sample to me. Sound like a sample to me.
Yeah.
And then and then at the end, Chili sings along with the choir. Like, you supposed to use the mess out of that, yo. So whatever. But I like the idea. I like the fact that he got TLC, just like he got Missy on the last album. You know. I like how he carried on that tradition, because I joke about it, but I'm serious. There's really a lot of 90s artists that we are influenced by that could really, it could benefit both ways, you know, to be featured on these new artists. Like, it's cool now, Doc, I don't know if you know this now, but it's cool now to say that Puff and Mace influenced you. I've been hearing that from a lot of rappers lately.
When was that not, when was the last time that wasn't cool?
Oh my God. I mean.
No, it's been a while.
Nah.
Yeah.
Oh no, son. I guess maybe because I come from, you know, I'm so.
So backpack.
No, I'm not so backpack. I just remember that time when Puff was like the Antichrist.
I know. I understand what you're saying, but I guess to me, once Mace had his little attempted comeback, I would say.
Which one?
The first one.
With the Madonna sample?
No. The Kanye 2004.
Yeah, he had the... Oh, no. Yeah.
Wait, he had a Madonna sample?
He had a Madonna sample on the album.
No, I can't tell you I even actually ever listened to that album. I just remember Breathe, Stretch, Shake, and Puff in the video. Was Puff in the video?
I don't remember. I wasn't watching TV at the time. I was in basic training when that song popped, so I missed all that. Remember the Lean Back remix? Yeah, Eminem on a Scott Storch beat to my Lean Back.
Anyway.
J. Cole.
So, you know, I think it's, you know, it's funny. Like, he's clearly, I think it's obvious that he's got better singles this time than last time.
Oh, yeah.
Feels like he might have a little something with this.
Okay.
And keep in mind, I mean, we nitpicked. That was actually one of our first. That was one of our early Clock Radio speakers. We went in on Your Majesty, Jermichael Jermaine.
Yeah, Jumanji Cole.
Jumanji Cole.
We got a lot of backlash from that episode too. Like, people were not happy that we didn't think that was the greatest album ever. And then ironically, we reviewed Fonte's album for like 10 minutes, and you were like, it's okay. And then like to this day, I still listen to that album pretty continuously. So that's interesting.
So let's talk about this track list.
Yeah.
Is there anything? So did you read the Complex breakdown?
No.
Complex broke down each track.
No, I stay off of Complex. I guess I probably need to go back on there, because now that I've rediscovered my love for Solange's second album, I probably need to go back on there because she's on the cover and I want to read that. So I'll go back on there. But what they heard the album?
Yeah, they sat down with J. Cole and went track by track.
Oh, I thought only Elliot Wilson was the only one who had heard the album. Okay.
So Forbidden Fruit.
Yeah.
With Kendrick.
Yeah.
It's J. Cole and Kendrick. They're going, it sounds a little bit like they're going back and forth talking about Adam and Eve.
Okay.
First of all, there's a song called Let Nas Down. I just have to.
Yeah. I thought we talked about that on the show where the name, it's funny because when it leaked online and he was like, and it was like the song was supposed to be called I Disappointed Nas. He's like, nah, it's not called I Disappointed Nas. Like he was offended.
Instead, it's called Let Nas Down.
Yeah. Like, come on. Really?
Oh man. Yeah. So the story is Nas was really disappointed with workout. J. Cole was really offended by that, or he took it to heart at least. I don't even know.
Now, but I thought he said there were no rappers. Nobody was rapping on the album. So it's Kendrick.
What he says. He's very specific. He says there are no 16-bar rap verses. That's accurate.
That's corny.
Him and Kendrick go back and forth. Kendrick never spits a full 16. And Kendrick does the hook.
That's corny. That's like super corny. Man.
Here's what I don't get. So the deluxe edition is just Truly Yours 3.
Yep.
Which isn't out yet, but I presume will be also available online for free.
I don't know. I don't know how he's going to roll that out.
Yeah, that's an interesting. I get maybe it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see if it's like a real second disc or not.
Nah,
that's a lot of tracks.
That is.
But some, you know, it's really
yeah, and
it's 12 tracks and 4 skits and then all the bonus.
Because I'm looking at the iTunes screenshot.
Yeah, I am right now too.
Yeah, 21 songs, 1 hour and 18 minutes. So, you know, okay. he did better than Kairos with more songs.
Nah, I mean, listen, if we would have split out our skits.
Oh, man.
We would have had 23?
23 and 23. Then 24 if you count Amy Winehouse.
Yeah, we're doing it cash money style.
Yeah.
Actually, that was more like a no limit thing, right?
It's no limit, yeah. No limit. Like, cash money was usually about 18.
No limit be like, yeah, we got 30 tracks on a 74 minute CD. Giving you more for your money.
Yeah, but that was back in the $16.99 Sam Goody. Somebody laughed at me because
nobody paid that though.
I did.
Oh man. That the mall stores had higher prices.
Now see, but my problem was that I didn't have a ride everywhere. So I couldn't go to Media Play or Best Buy and get it for $10. I could go to the mall and while I was there, pay the extra $7.
I was talking about almost every episode, but you know, for me it was the BXPX. Very reliable, like $11.
Yeah.
That was the way to go.
It's like $12.98 or something. Yeah, something
you know, like obviously we're not going to sit here and try to project what an album will sound like off a track list. That is not this kind of podcast. I definitely, if you haven't, you know, obviously you haven't, but anybody who's listening to this, like, go read the Complex Breakdown. Sounds like, I would say he was inspired by Kendrick, but this is certainly a more, I want to say spiritual, because that brings a wrong connotation, especially on this podcast. It is a more conscientious J. Cole.
I mean, it's called Born Sinner, so I'm expecting a level of personal spirituality on the album. Right. I'm expecting that.
That's fair enough.
I'm expecting that.
He's
got Kearney. So I don't know if you know who Pat. I'm sure he. I mean, the second track is Kearney Sermon. So if you're on YouTube, and you know, I'm sure a lot of our listeners, you know, our wonderful Christian audience, they're up on Pastor Kearney, who's one of those 2 a.m. BET preachers. But he's hilarious though. So I'm wondering what direction they go with that. If that's something where they're kind of, you know, poking fun or what. But that lets me know. That Voluminati, like, it's just little things here and there on top of the Born Sinner let me know that he's going to be using some spiritual themes to kind of bring the story home. So I'm expecting it. Anything else J. Cole related?
What are you? So you're anticipating? Are you? Would you say you're anticipating this more than his last album?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, you know what? The funny, all these albums that are coming out in the next few weeks, I'm looking forward to. I'm actually looking forward to Yeezus the least. But yeah, Mac, I'm actually looking forward to Wale's album the most. Just because I liked Ambition that much. I really liked Ambition.
Ambition was good, but it wasn't.
It surprised me.
I give you that.
It surprised, and it carried over, and I studied what Wale did with that, as how that album carried him basically 8 months, and I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, I think he takes some risks on this album. I think we talked about that last week, with the love hate thing.
I mean, speaking of Wale, he's got a couple songs out right now.
Yeah, and the whole MMG, look at that. Yo, your segue game is A1. I don't know how often I have to tell you that, but great job, because I wasn't even thinking about that. But yes.
The problem is we keep calling out when we make such great segues. Like, it'd be...
Sorry.
It's all good. Right. So he's got the Bad remix with Rihanna.
Yep.
How do you feel about this?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. Like, I guess let's bring the story home. So
yeah.
Bad was originally a song by Tierra Thomas. It's her song. Wale gets it from her, keeps her on the hook, you know, puts it out. I think that's probably the reason why they dropped Falarin, was to roll that out, to have a reason to roll that out, a collection of material, because I don't think his album was done.
Yeah.
So like, hey, we've got a mixtape ready of stuff, but let's squeeze Bad in the middle of this mixtape, because really nothing else on the album really sounded like Bad. So they push Bad. It does well. It lasts, you know, however many months to prep for The Gifted. And then Tierra signs with Division One, who is Rico Love's label. Division One Interscope, she signs there. And then in turn, he puts Rihanna on the remix. And, you know, they both said that there was no love lost. There's no, you know, she's not salty about it. I'm sure she got compensated for it. Yeah, so she's putting out other music. She re-released her original version, because her version was out first. She re-released her original version, and now you've got Wale and Rihanna on this record together. I forgot they did something on his first album. Like, what was it called? Contemplate? It was really depressing. But so was Wale's first album.
So Bad, like, to me, this tells me they're going to try to ride this until the album drops, right?
Well into this album. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, is Love Hate Thing a single?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's a buzz. We're obviously not going to blow with this single. I think this is one of those, you know, I'm going to do something different on my album. You know, I think that's one of those singles that like preps you, like, look, this album is probably, there's going to be some stuff that sounds like this on the album. Because Wale kind of tripped and fell into his female audience, which is a large chunk of his audience. But before then, he had a very conscious audience. And I think Love Hate Thing kind of caters to both. It's got the conscious vibe to it, but then, you know, he's kind of got some girl raps in there, some diced pineapples in there.
Yeah, I'm looking at the track listing now. He's it looks like he's definitely going for that sort of approach where he's going to try to have something for everybody.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he's got a song with Nicki and Juicy J called Clappers. I give you one second as to tell you what that sounds like.
Well, from what I understand, that's going to be the next single, and they're projecting that to be pretty big.
Yeah.
Go right along with that hopefully that might set up Juicy's album, right?
Yeah, you know, Juicy's interesting. So far removed from bands at this point. So he sort of has, I don't want to say he has to start over, but, you know,
he needs another hit record. He's not going to get something as big as Band. Well, I mean, the funny part is,
never say never.
Yeah, because you're always, I realize now with somebody like Meek Mill and the Levels joint, like, you're really just one record, you're always one record away.
People really like that level song.
They do.
I do not understand that at all.
They do. I told you why. It's a psychology thing.
It doesn't sound that good. Like, whatever. Anyway.
And it's slow. It's slow and yeah. Oh, he's got Life Jennings on his album.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Life Yo, you.
On a song with Yo Gotti of all things. Anyway, Wale's also got one of the three leaks from the new Self-Made 3.
Yeah, they announced Self-Made 3. How do you feel about Self-Made 3, first off?
The explanation behind it was really interesting. It was that when they're recording all this stuff, they sometimes record songs that don't fit into a particular vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And so they still went away to release that.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I get that, but it's not like their albums are so stylistically consistent that there's not room for like the it's not like the songs that they release don't sound like MMG songs. It was a weird explanation for that.
I mean, but it's funny because the three records that they leaked to me don't sound like Self-Made 1 MMG songs. They don't sound like Self-Made 2 MMG songs.
They sound like Ross records.
We'll get into that in a second. Well, that's my point, Doc.
Like when I say MMG, I mean Ross. Okay. I should clarify that because, when I say an MMG sound, I mean Ross's different sounds.
He does.
Right.
Was he have three?
He's got the Justice League sound.
Yep.
He's got
the trap sound.
The trap sound.
And I'd say,
well, those are the two main sounds.
Those are the two main sounds. And he has, you know, once we does other, he does other stuff. I'm not a star still with Trap Record. Number one.
I would say, and he also has and he showed this a little bit on his last album. I mean, record sound to me like this this Poor Decision song. Right, that yeah. I think that beat would have fit in on God Forgives I Don't.
Yeah.
So it's you know it's Wale with Ross and Lupe.
Lupe.
Jake won on the beat.
Yeah.
Beat is cool.
Yeah.
Ross is all right.
Yeah.
Lupe's nice.
Yeah.
And Wale, you know, we could.
Wale heard that Lupe verse and got scared. He got nervous. Got a little nervous. He was like, "Oh, that's what we doing." But now Lupe cleaned up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They should have put Lupe last.
Yeah.
Because who's going to stay and listen to Wale after that?
Listen to Wale, yeah.
So
Hold on.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to make this point real quick before we go talk about these other two records.
Yeah, yeah.
Self-Made 3 to me.
Oh, yeah.
Says that Mastermind isn't ready. That spoke to Ross more than.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, I would also take that as saying Meek needs help.
Yeah, because they didn't put out DC3.
Although notice we had three leaks, three videos, not a single whiff of Meek Mill.
Nah, they should have had that Levels video ready.
Yeah, I think they got a little surprised by that.
Yeah, nah. They were pushing that record a little bit.
They were trying, but like they had videos ready for these. Like these have been in the can. Like they you know, I think Levels.
Which lets me know that this was a decision that was probably made in, I don't know, March?
I don't know if they need that much time, but...
No, I mean, well, okay. Well, March, April at the latest to say, hey, look, you know...
Well, Box Chevy wasn't doing anything.
Box Chevy didn't do anything. Mika kind of stalled. Swank, because remember we had this conversation about a month ago. Like, we were complaining because there was no MMG anything on the radio.
I don't know if we were complaining. I think we might have been noting.
Noting, whatever. Stally had stalled out. You know, Nipsey had signed at the end of the year. There's still no victory lap. He hadn't leaked anything. Since then, he's leaked like three records in a month. Rocky Fresh was dropping random mixtapes for no reason. So there seemed to be a whole lot of like discontent or disorientation. We'll say that.
Okay.
Like, they seemed to be disoriented a little bit. Now it seems that they're all back on one accord, and I like it because I think it benefits everybody. If Ross doesn't drop until the end of the year, until like October, this benefits everybody because you can put Omarion on an album because they've messed up on Omarion a few times. You can put Rocky Fresh. You can introduce Rocky Fresh and Nipsey. You know, Wale doesn't really have to be on the album like that. I'm sure he is, but you know, he's got that in the Gifted. And then you can kind of reestablish Ross and Meek Mill. I think it's a good move.
Well, here's what I don't get. Why do you have to put out these three records at the same time?
I'm not mad at it, because to me they're three different records.
They are, but you've got the three different records, and you've got that Meek record that they should be pushing like crazy right now.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, we're still a long way from the album actually coming out.
When does it come out? August?
August.
Oh, that's stupid. Okay, that's stupid. I thought it was coming out in July. I'm bugging.
So they're going to have to do another round of leaks.
Yeah.
Like, they're not going to just, because none of these are singles. Let's be 100% clear.
No.
These are leaks. They leaked three records, plus Wale has the best, plus the Levels record.
That's five records.
It's five records to be pushing, and only one of them has an album coming out anytime soon.
Yeah. And Meek does not by any means need to put out Dream Chasers 3 at all.
Well, I don't know. He needs to do something with Levels.
He needs to do something with Levels. It's kind of like with, you know what I noticed, man? Like, what is RIP on? Why is RIP on the radio? What?
Mixtape.
Whose mixtape?
That was on Jeezy's mixtape, right?
That was on the one that It's the World that just dropped like a week ago, right?
No, it was before that.
It was on the. Was it on the first one?
I thought so. Am I wrong? Hold on. Yeah, it was from It's the World.
Oh. All right. Never mind. All right. Okay.
By the way, I'm not looking up RIP on Wikipedia. I finally understand why DJ Mustard is named DJ Mustard.
Why?
His first name is Dijon.
Oh my God.
You see, he's releasing an album called Ketchup.
He put out, it was a mixtape. He put it out already.
How you feel about that?
I haven't heard it, but I heard the Dom Kennedy record and it was all right. So, you know, I get it. I think, you know, Mike Will kind of ushered that trend in a little bit. So I get it. I think he needs that because now he's trying to, you know, one of the things that the Knife Wonder said was, you know, when he was going through that threat, is she the reason Mary J. Blige, when he was doing all those records, like he wasn't putting himself out like that. And he said he kind of regrets that he wasn't doing what Just Blaze and Pharrell were doing, kind of putting a face to the beats. So I think nowadays, you know, producers want just as much credit as the artists do.
I don't know anything about that, but I I would say DJ Mustard's one of those producers that makes me feel like an old man because I listen to his records and I'm like, I don't, you know, between him and Harry Fry, we're going to talk about a little later.
Yeah.
Most of the time, like when I hear Harry Fry, I'm like, yeah, that's cool. But I'm not like, you know, people are like, oh, it's Harry Fry. And I'm like, really? Yeah. You know, and like first there was I'm Different. And now RIP, and now we're going to have just, I mean, look, I don't blame the guy. He's going to take that sound and sell it to every rapper who wants something just like it.
And that's the funny part. I listened to J. Cole's interview with Elliot Wilson, and he made a really good point where he was like, you know, people were talking about how repetitive his beats are, but he's like, you know, turn on the radio and, you know, a lot of producers who are popping right now take that one sound and, as you said, run it into the ground. So, I mean, what's the difference?
I would say the difference is that, and I understand what he's saying, but I would say the difference is that fans don't, you know, nobody's, well, I see what DJ Mustard's trying to do, but for the most part, people aren't like listening to 15 DJ Mustard records back to back. Whereas they will listen to an album of J. Cole's records back to back. So if an album all sounds the same, you're in trouble. I would say that's the difference.
Mm.
So we got two more MMG records to talk about.
Yep. Yep.
Let's talk about Rocky Fresh.
Okay, that was the third one. That was the other one I was thinking about. Yep.
Rocky Fresh. It's called God Is Great.
Yeah.
Produced by Boy Wonder and the Maven Boys.
Yep.
So this was really this was the first leak.
Yep.
So let me just say, needless to say, Rocky still has a very good ear for beats.
Yeah, the beat is dope.
The beat is dope. Song is cool. It's all right.
Yeah.
Rocky's not setting the world on fire on the song.
Not at all.
But the beat's nice. Yeah, this is actually cool. probably this might I know you're gonna hate this. I think this is out of the three songs. This is my favorite beat right here.
Yeah, you're bugging.
No, I'm not. I'm gonna explain why. I'll explain. I think it's the best one of the three. This is an interesting choice to introduce Rocky Fresh, for them to really try to introduce Rocky Fresh to the masses.
Yeah, because they premiered this video on 106. You know, they premiered all the videos on 106, but you know he got a look.
Yeah.
For this.
Whereas there were records, even with Ross from his last two mixtapes.
Electric Highway should have gotten a few more visuals. They could have pushed that a little bit more.
Even just on his most recent one, there was a record with Ross that's you really dope. About
the, what was it called? Like El Pollo Loco? What was the name of that beat? What's the name of that song?
I'm going to look at this one. Hold on. Everybody's hearing from me going to Wikipedia.
I think we're used to it.
Yeah. This place might as well just be sponsored by Wikipedia at this point.
Right.
Really, Wikipedia? You don't have articles for his...
I'm not surprised.
Uh-oh. Now I got to go to DatPiff. Hold on.
No, that's unnecessary.
Of course, DatPiff has horrible tagging. I can't even remember what it was called. Was it Panera Bread?
Might have been, yeah.
It's a great name for a song. Who doesn't love Panera? But anyway, no, you know, he's had records this year that... You think might have been an obvious choice for a look, but
yeah.
And or frankly, they could have those, like, you want to talk about stuff to put on Self-Made 3, like any one of those songs that really sounds like Rocky Fresh. Like he has a certain sound. He's working, you know, his main producer is what, Lunice? Lunice and Hudson Mohawk together make up, I just pronounced the group TNGHT. Is that what you call it?
Tonight, I guess.
You call it Tonight. It's Tonight missing every vowel possible.
Yeah.
So his producer that he works with most of the time, Lunice, like him and like they have a sound.
They do.
They could have taken one of the better tracks off of Electric Highway and just threw like someone else from MG and called it the remix. Like give that a push. Like this is Rocky Fresh. We're giving him the cosign, but here's his sound.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Was I would say God is great. Like I like the beat, but it doesn't really sound like Rocky Fresh to me. So that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Right? As they roll him out to like the masses. Does he retain his sound? I think that's always the challenge as MMG integrates new people. Right? Wale right. probably did it the most successfully because he adapted. He adapted the sound. He adopted the best parts. I would say that Stolly, he's struggling.
No. Yeah.
So we'll see what happens with Rocky. But, you know, I like the beat. And then let's talk about those Rick Ross and Jadakiss Oil Money Gang.
Yeah.
You're a fan.
Yeah. This record is crazy.
Justice League on the beat.
Justice League.
Very smooth.
Lonnie Liston Smith sample.
Let me talk about this beat for a second. Uh-oh. It's pretty good. It's not amazing. Yeah. I think people go, you know, like, oh my God, it's one of those smooth, quote unquote, Justice League beats. Like, this is deeper than Rap Ross. And they just get crazy. It's like, it's a good beat, but it's not great. There's a lot better Justice League beats that they got.
I'm not going to discredit the beat because they have better beats. You know, one thing that we talk about is that, hey, Ross needs to be making more songs like this.
Sure, but just because the song's like it doesn't mean it's still a good song. Well, I think Ross is pretty good on this, but he's not great. I don't really like Jadakiss on this.
Oh,
at all.
You're bugging. That's the best Jadakiss verse in years.
No, the tempo is all wrong for his flow.
His flow isn't there for me. I hate Jadakiss on the for whatever reason. Like they love him on Southern beats, so like he'll get on, like, remember him on the Never Scared remix? Like, just those really slow beats. He was on, like, a Lil Jon record. Nah, I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. This is, like, at the tip of how fast or how slow I want Jada rap it. Because Jada kind of fits in that. I'm not really fluent in my BPMs, but what am I thinking? High 80s?
I haven't loaded this one up to figure it out. I don't know.
Well, I mean, like where Jadakiss shines the best, like,
well, he's, like, he's, yeah. Oh, you like
my
see,
favorite? My favorite verse from Jada is 40 Bars of Terror. That's Champ Is Here One. Terror Squad.
My favorite Jada is blood pressure.
Okay. But that, and that's the tempo that I want Jade, or that I like Jade at.
Okay.
So what is that?
I don't know. Off the top of my head.
Just off the top of your head, like, is like 91, is that too fast?
Now you're going to make me like go and tap this out real quick. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head, but okay. Like when I think of New York rappers who do better at slightly more up-tempo, I think of someone like Banks.
Yeah. We'll talk about him in a minute.
Like the slowest I want to hear Banks is in like the mid to upper 80s.
Yeah.
I really want him in the 90s. But Jada, I don't mind Jada on Southern Beats. And I will say that just because, like, you know, we're getting extra nerdy and talking about BPMs, but I'll say that just because there's a rule of thumb about a rapper, there are sometimes still, just due to how a rapper likes to put words together, there might be, even if, like, let's say someone's really good at mid-tempo and someone's really good at slow tempo, there still might be a pocket there in the middle that they're still kind of awkward at, especially mm-hmm. if they switch up the flow when they go from, it's almost like shifting a car, right? Mm-hmm. If they switch their flow up when they go from low to mid, if you catch them right in that middle space, sometimes it's a little weird. Now I'm getting real nerdy.
Yeah.
That's me where this Jada verse fits. Like he's right in that like transition up. And I don't know. It's just not, I mean, I'm overanalyzing to death. Like when I hear it, it just doesn't knock me out. It's cool. It's a good song. It's not great.
Kills that verse. Nah, you're bugging. Best song out of the three. I think Poor Decisions is the worst out of the three, but. I'm sorry. God is Great is the worst out of the three.
The beat alone on God is Great is great.
I mean, it's cool, but.
That's a really good beat.
It's because of Rockland Fresh.
Is that his new nickname? Rockland Fresh?
Yeah, Rockland. But all in all, you know, I guess we can both agree and say that these three records are they're good records. Like
they're good, but they're not great records either.
Well, I'm like, now Self-Made 3 is on my radar. I'll say that.
Sure.
If I would have heard three more, you know.
Box Chevys.
No, hold on. I just thought about when they went to Las Vegas and they had David Copperfield come out.
For those who don't know, who aren't longtime listeners to Cloud Radio Speakers, this is for Self-Made 2, right?
Yeah.
Black Magic's name of the song, right?
Black Magic.
Black Magic. So they perform Black Magic live in Las Vegas, and the verse of Black Magic, you know, references David Copperfield.
Yeah.
So Ross gets David Copperfield to be out there. But the worst part is it's not like – I mean the song's called Black Magic and it's like – it's not like it's a reveal and then boom, David Copperfield appears, which would have been amazing. Or like David Copperfield like doing a trick where like Ross appears with the Maybach out of nowhere. Like that would have been interesting. Instead, he's just awkwardly out there.
He just walks out.
It just makes like, no sense.
They're like, David Copperfield, y'all. Make some noise. They're like, what?
Speaking of Jadakiss, he's got a new song out.
Yeah.
With our man, Tarius Nash.
Yeah, with Tarius.
You all right that you coming back down?
You got to give me a minute. Go ahead and talk about the song. I'll be honest.
It's called Big Boy Dialogue.
Yeah.
It's not, I don't think this is produced by The Dream because it samples.
Yeah. Right.
It's a very familiar sample. Like if you grew up in East Coast hip hop, you're going to recognize the sample.
Yeah.
I think the song's all right.
It's cool.
It's cool.
It's cool.
You know, this is he's got a street album, aka a mixtape, coming out. Is that right?
Oh, another one, really?
Top 5 Dead or Alive, right?
No, I thought that was an album. We gotta put out an album, B. I want an album. Top 5 Dead or Alive has to be an album. That's not something that you say. When did he say that? 99?
No, I take that back. It's 2000. Top 5 Dead or Alive.
That's just off one LP. Like, nah. No.
Yeah,
that
this
has
is
to be an
this
album.
Is it's an album. It's an album.
Okay.
Due later this year off Def Jam.
Okay.
With apparently a new Lox project to follow.
Who did they sign with?
I have no idea.
Well, then I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. Okay.
It's all right. Song's all right.
Song is cool. You know, all right, cool. Jada's coming out with
this. This is his warm up, like, hey, everybody, I'm here.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm
pulling for him. I hope Jada finally, you know, gets over that hump and drops the album that I think a lot of us have kind of expected him to drop.
I think that ship has sailed.
let me be optimistic.
Okay.
Let me be optimistic. Because I agree, but I don't want to agree.
Okay.
I don't want to agree.
Speaking of, a lot of new records from New York people this week.
Summer Jam, come on.
Let's talk about Action Bronson.
Yeah.
Action Bronson featuring your man LL.
Yeah.
Lloyd Banks.
Yeah.
Strictly From My Jeeps remix.
Yep.
Harry Fraud on the beat.
Yep.
How you feel about this?
I like it. I wish it was longer.
Mm.
I think it's 3 8 bar verses, or 3 12 bar verses. I think it's 3 12 bar verses. Nah. I need full 3 16, because the record's not even 3 minutes long. Soon as you get into the verse, here comes the hook. Like, nah. I need four more from each of those, because everybody kills this record. Dare I say Bronson has the worst verse on the record?
He does.
Okay.
But that's only because LL Cool J just pulled a Dwayne Wade, and, you know, I don't know if he flew to Germany and got like the blood transfusion or whatever, but like LL is alive on the song.
Yeah.
And Banks comes unleashed too.
Yeah, he parked in his mentions when Accident and Racist dropped, and he just used it as fuel. Like, oh, okay. Boom.
Nah, I wouldn't put it like that. I mean, maybe that's true, but I don't want to hear that excuse from him. Because Accidental Racist, he knew what he was doing.
Yeah, of course he did. He owns up to it.
You know, that record is an abomination. Man's a legend.
Has anybody heard that album?
The country album?
No, his album that just came out like 2 weeks ago.
No one. I don't think anybody has heard it. Literally nobody in the world has heard that album.
Between that and Eve's album, like, I haven't heard anything.
Yeah, that Eve album, man. Talk about a record that nobody heard about.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Who was she signed with?
That's a good question.
I guess we can pull up on Spotify.
Yeah, we're trying to find this right now. Man. Eve's 35? Wow. When did that happen?
Sounds about right.
Wait, how long is she? Oh, this is the record that she's been working on for like 6 years.
This is Tambourine, right?
This is Tambourine. Wow. Which I actually liked.
Wow. No, your Swiss Beat Slander card has been revoked, sir.
What are you talking about? You don't like Tambourine?
No! Tambourine, no!
She is signed to Red Distribution.
She's got a distribution deal. Okay. All right. So there you go. So now riddle me this.
Wow. 8,600 copies first week.
Okay. Now riddle me this. Distribution companies do not help with promo, right?
No. Not unless, in the way that we're thinking of. She signed to some label called From the Rib.
That has to be her. Eve.
I know.
That's her. So she went indie.
Yeah, it's her own. There it is. Her own independent record label.
Yeah, so she's indie. She you know, probably didn't have a crazy budget. So I get it.
So, yeah, Strictly For My Jeep. So, I already mentioned it once in this episode. I'm not the world's biggest fan of Harry Fraud. I get it. You know, I think he's got something with this sort of very old New York meets new production style.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see who takes that and runs with it for real. Like,
there's got to be a hit somewhere in there.
You'd think French was close.
Shot Caller was close.
It was close. French abandoned him on the. We're talking about French later on. Don't worry. French abandoned him on the album. Yeah. Action's not going to be that guy. There's no way Action Bronson's going to be a crossover. Like, but I think somebody could do something with it, though.
Somebody. The right person.
That's right.
The right person. And it probably will it will have to be a established artist.
I was just going to say, I wonder if Jay gives him a call. Oh, you know what? Considering he... Was Harry... Where's Harry? Is Harry from Queens, or does he just work with a lot of dudes from Queens?
I don't know where he's from. Probably from like Providence or something.
Yeah, shout out to
you. Here you go.
No, you know.
You, oh, you shout Providence, you get money up there?
No, I don't actually. No, he's from Brooklyn. Okay, Harry Fraud's from Brooklyn.
Well, there you go. Connection. Boom. Jay-Z, Brooklyn. Now he's got to sample what? Brooklyn Zoo, Crooklyn Dodgers, Blase Blase Danger.
No, it'll be something big. Like Biggie. It'll be or something Bad Boy, definitely. You could do Juicy.
It's
been done. It's been done.
Did that to death. That's an Uncle Murder move.
Maybe, you know, maybe something Big Daddy Kane.
Yeah, he could do.
Yeah, I'll tell you right now. If Harry Fraud sent Jay something with a noteworthy Big Daddy Kane sample, Jay's just writing the check right there.
Ain't no half stepping. Yeah, he could update. Ain't no half stepping.
He could update that.
Jay wants to get on his Iggity Biggity stuff. He could redo. What was the one? What was the one on the Juice soundtrack?
Oh, good.
Enough Respect. Just sounds like a gunfight, like a gun battle. I don't know if you remember that, but yeah, that sounds like an idea. Or Fab, because we didn't talk about this Fab record.
What Fab record?
The one with Fab and 2 Chainz, When I Want To.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yo, how does Fab let 2 Chainz walk all over him in that record?
2 Chainz, but I'm telling you. 2 Chainz has been cleaning up a few people on these collaborations.
Such as?
Don't think I'm gonna
let a statement like that just get
I'll
out there.
I'll say this. I liked him on, was it Chris Tucker? Was that the record he did with J. Cole on Truly Yours 2?
He was all right.
He's cool. I liked him on R.I.P. I liked him on Bees in the Trap.
I mean, these aren't...
But I mean,
Fab is a legitimate MC.
No. I think that it takes a level of skill to do a radio and make commercial music.
I'm not denying that at all.
And
but Fab, if anybody from New York who's still you know not old, although he's getting there, can cross that line between being able to make a radio record and still like be a lyricist. Fab's in that conversation.
No.
You don't think so?
I'm done with Fab. I'm done with Fab. I'm done. This record, like, you can't be known for being consistently lazy in your career and making mediocre music, and then you put out a song called When I Want To, and then your first ad lib, as soon as the beat starts, is I Ain't In No Rush. Yes, you are. Nah, get out of here. Get out of here.
That's you being annoyed on a rapper. You're on that rapper tip.
Nah, this is somebody who listened to Fab, you know, rapping over Money, Power, Respect on Clue's mix show. Fab and Nori. This is a fan of, no, I wasn't a fan of Fabulous Sport.
I was going to say, we bringing back the Fabulous Sport days?
Nah, not Fabulous Sport, because I was like, who is this guy? He sounds like Mason, he sucks. But, you know, come on, the only time I seen Tom Behind Bars is in the Cartier. The Funk Flex It's Yours freestyle off 60 Minutes of Funk Volume 4. But this isn't even me as a dog. My album's done. I'm not even thinking like a rapper anymore. I'm good. I'm back to being fan Armand that just wants to hear good music, because a lot of good music is coming out and I want to enjoy it. But nah, man, like nah, Fab. No, I'm good.
All right,
Fab hasn't put out that album. The closest he did to putting out that album that people thought he was capable of. I mean, he's in the same boat as, to me, he's in the same boat as Jada.
No, he's way ahead of Jada.
No.
No, Jada. No. When was the last time Jada had a really good mixtape?
Champ Is Here Too.
How long ago was that?
Dolly, 2004?
I was going to say.
When was the last time Fab had a good mixtape?
He just had one.
What, the Soul Tape?
Yeah.
Man, get out of here.
Both of those
were mind-numbingly mediocre.
All right.
They had a couple records on them.
That's a couple more than Jada's had.
Oh. That's the funny part. The funny part, Doc, is when people like when people hear us disagree, I think they get like nervous, like they think we're really gonna fight, and then we just start laughing. Like, come on! But
yeah, we sitting here arguing about Fabulous.
I've known Doc for 10 years. I'm not gonna ruin our friendship because he and I disagree on Fab's discography.
I got a song I think we're gonna disagree on. Speaking of you, man, 2 Chainz.
Yeah.
Let's 2 Chainz and go. Pharrell. Feds watching.
Yep.
How do you feel about this?
I don't hate it. The beat is cool. I think I don't like 2 Chainz on it. I probably need to hear it a few more times. What about you?
I think the beat is okay.
Okay.
I think 2 Chainz is 2 Chainz. This is what I'm interested in. This is not at all what I'd expect from a first single from Dos Cadenas. This is an interesting move.
Yeah.
I'll say that Pharrell had a nice little like run, nice little hot streak.
He did. But
this record and that Busta record, I don't know, man.
They trying to push that Busta record, man.
They got a Nicki remix coming.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Are you predicting that? Or have you heard that?
Heard it.
Okay.
Haven't heard. Oh, I heard that it's coming. I haven't heard the record.
Okay. Well, yeah. That's mind-numbingly obvious. There's no remix without her.
I don't really like either of those records.
Nah, the horns on Twerk It are hilarious on the hook.
they are. Those horns are great. To me, Pharrell's in heat check mode right now.
What is that?
Heat check, that's a basketball term, right? So if you're, obviously you know this, but this is for the reference for everybody else. So if you're like, if you're really feeling it in a game, this is like when LeBron is like really feeling it and he starts tossing up like 28 footers. It's a heat check. He's like, how hot am I really? Can I really make this? And so Pharrell's had a little bit of run, and these are like weird beats, but not like weird and like, oh, it's amazing. It's sort of like, that's just kind of weird. Like Pharrell's in heat check mode. Like, can he, first of all, he got these records sold, but now can they become hits or at least radio, like in radio rotation?
Yeah.
So to me, they're heat check records.
Okay.
It's an interesting record. This is, he will certainly have another, 2 Chainz will have another single before the album drops.
Oh, absolutely. I think this is the, hey guys, I'm dropping a second album single. Mm. I think this is the thing now, Doc. Like, you know, Miss America with J. Cole, like, excuse me, you put out these buzz records. And I think, you know, in the instance of, you know, sometimes it works and they just push that as the main single. So they can, it's like a win-win because you push the single out, it doesn't do well, you can at least put it out as a bonus track on the deluxe version of your album, even though the regular version doesn't exist.
But the problem comes is if you push it out, but the album's not ready. Like if it's close to being ready, and then if the song takes on a life of its own quicker than you're ready for.
Like that happens. That happens more often than we give credit for.
That's French Montana Pop that all over
again. There you go. Yep.
He's the best example of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
That can definitely happen.
Yeah, you know. But I think he's all right. I don't think this record is.
No, I agree. Even, I agree with that.
Yeah, even I mean, but it's funny though because you could kind of tell. Like, come on, like you didn't think Pop That was gonna. And I'm not asking you.
Sure.
You think Pop That was gonna blow up? Like
that to me, that Luke, was an obvious. Like, okay,
Luke sample, Wayne's verse, Drake's verse, that tempo. Come on, you weren't ready for that. But all right, whatever. Whatever, bro.
We got a couple of the singles we need to talk about.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this Wu-Tang sample. This Wu-Tang single.
Yeah.
Family Reunion.
Yeah.
Produced by RZA.
Yeah, of course.
If you want to use the word produced.
Those bong bong drums. That's all RZA.
These are not my favorite RZA drums.
I hate those drums.
He needs to, you know. He needs to go find the analog gear he used to make like Wu-Tang Forever and just run all his drums through that. Because these are, no. The sample is like, man, talk about like using all of a sample.
They just rapped over the song.
I know.
He just threw some drums on it.
It's a weird sample for Wu-Tang to me because it's meant to be nostalgic, but this is not like if I'm thinking of like being nostalgic about Wu-Tang, this is not a type of record that they as a group would rap on.
Yeah.
Like you might talk me into like ghost rapping on something. That's his move. Although he'll typically do it over like a soul love song. Right? Like Hala is amazing.
But yeah.
Right. In the weird way that only Ghostface can make that song. So like,
of course,
it's a nostalgic, it's meant to be a nostalgic record, but this is not really in the Wu like wheelhouse to me.
It's not, but it doesn't sound like a stretch.
It's a little bit of a stretch to me. It's just not. Yeah, it's weird. It's asking me to be nostalgic for a version of Wu-Tang that just never existed.
They're older.
They are older.
They're old. So the song didn't. When I first heard it, you know, I heard the rip. The so radio, you know, rip, I hear the Hot 90s. I hear them hyping it up. And, you know, then I hear the sample and I'm like, I know y'all didn't do this. But as I listen to the song, the progression of it, I mean, gee, whose verse was that? Was that Master Killer's verse?
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't hate it.
I didn't hate it either. But this doesn't do it for me.
Again, this is in the same case of the 2 Chainz and Pharrell record. This is a, hey, we're really putting out this album.
I can see that.
They're coming out with another Fourth Chamber Mathematics, you know, that the Wu sound that you want, they're gonna
never
come out with that.
No. Let me clear this up right now. That Wu sound is never coming back, and I'm okay with that. I will forever have the records that are sitting over my shoulder in my little office here. Right? I will forever have Iron Man, Cuban Lynx, Liquid Swords. I will forever have that era. That era is not coming back. And I know that. It's over.
Let it go, dog.
It's done. It's over. So I just want to know, can they make compelling music? Right? Because Cuban Lynx 2, for all of its flaws, had compelling songs. It wasn't great. It had problems. But there were compelling individual songs that worked. So I just want to make sure they can make compelling music again. Because 8 Diagrams never happened.
What?
Exactly. All right. Now that I set the record straight on Wu-Tang, did you listen to this No Malice song?
No.
The beat is all right. No Malice, he just doesn't have it. Mm. At least if this record's any judge, he's okay. Maybe. Mm. Like, it's very middling to me. Very like, You know, he's getting he's getting looks on the blogs and everything.
Yeah.
But
I mean, Clips did a great job of maintaining, you know, in between deals, especially that long stretch before Till the Casket Drops came out. Yeah. They did a really good job of like making relationships. They kind of, you know, as I talked about earlier, a few weeks ago, how somebody made the point about boutique rap with like the Cool Kids, and it was like right in between, like it was around the time blog rap was starting to decline.
Yeah.
Your Charles Hamilton's and your UNIs and all that stuff. You know, Clips kind of ate off of that little era, that little stretch. So that doesn't surprise me that, you know, Miss Info and all these other people show Malice, you know, maybe not as much love as Pusha, but a good substantial amount. I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I know that you've said that at one point Malice was outshining Pusha, but I don't think anybody can really make that argument right now.
No.
Yeah. So I think that's just the last random track to talk about.
Yep.
Because now we need to talk about Summer Jam.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
So, Summer Jam 20.
Yeah.
Held in beautiful New York.
Of course.
So we had Fabulous there. You brought out Kim to do Queen Bee.
So let's do this. Let's just go one by one. So let's start with Fab.
Yep.
So go ahead and finish.
He was supposed to bring out Foxy.
Yep. Foxy
didn't happen.
Was late. She was late for her thing, and they were time Nazis, understandably so, because the last few years, you know, they've gotten cut off. They haven't been able to finish the show. So understandable.
So Kim comes out and does Queen Chick.
Queen Bee.
Queen Bee.
Yeah.
One of her best records.
Far and away. She couldn't do how many licks and didn't bring out Cisco.
How about No Matter What People Say? She could do that
one. There's a funny video on YouTube of like them behind the scenes, like somebody got, and it's just her, Mary, and Missy, and Mary and Missy are just like plastered. And they're just like, they'll start dancing all crazy. And then as soon as they hit cut, like both Mary and Missy will just plop on the couch and just pass out. And then as soon as they say action, they'll jump back up and start dancing again. It's funny. Don't ask me how I found that footage.
So Fab was cool. He, you know, he brought out Pusha, brought out Meek.
What did Pusha do?
Life is so exciting.
Oh, right. How did the crowd respond to that?
I think they liked that record.
Okay.
That's a very New York record. So, you know, in 2013, if you want to make a New York record, so half the time you just got to pitch that up.
Pitch.
So we have Wu-Tang doing a fantastic set.
Great set.
Everything from Triumph.
They did everything. They opened with Bring the Ruckus. They did Shame on a New. They had ODB Son on stage, who, you know, security tried to kick out because they didn't know who he was.
That's foul.
The thing that I loved about this set was that at the beginning, New York was not trying to mess with Wu-Tang. And by the end of the show, the crowd was in the palm of their hands.
Yeah, they know how to put on a good show.
Yeah. A lot of struggle, a lot of denim short struggle though.
Listen, what do you expect, man?
I know.
Your man Wale.
Yeah, I didn't see a lot of the early sets. How did Wale do?
You know, he did Lotus Flower Bomb.
Of course.
He did Bad.
Miguel came out?
Yeah, Miguel came out. No leg drops. No, you see that girl suing him, right? Or going? Yeah. Wait, she's possibly going to?
She's looking into it because she said brain damage.
I mean, if she got a concussion or worse from that,
she was giggling. I know some concussions like can be delayed. I get that.
Well, not even that. I mean, maybe she was delirious because she was. I mean, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
The interesting thing is they seem to be taking attack of going after the awards themselves. Because I guess the awards, instead of, because obviously they have paramedics on site and whatever. They just tossed her a bag of ice.
Oh, wow.
They didn't have anybody look at her. Like, that's from a corporation point of view, that's a legal mistake.
Absolutely. Like, and they go ahead.
Like, you take her bag, like, we're going to have this medical crew check you out. Like, absolutely. You just take care of that. They're there anyway. Like, you take care of that on the spot. You don't throw the bag of ice. And I mean,
now she was backstage, right? Because didn't they interview her and Miguel? Like,
Miguel was trying to do the, you know, I'm gonna be nice to you. Please don't sue me.
right. Yeah, that's it. Because then I read somewhere where the Billboard Awards said that they forbid artists from jumping sets.
Yeah, I'm sure that sounds like they're already trying to pawn off liability there.
Right. Who's the only other person to jump from set to set? Chris Brown?
Yeah, I've never heard of that. That's
Yeah, not enough to where that's in the rules of don't do this. Because usually, you know, they'll see it for a while and they'll say, hey, that could be a liability. Let's put that in, you know, contract.
Never mind that. They always do a run through. I would find it hard to believe. Maybe this is just how stupid it was, but I find it hard to believe Miguel attempted that without successfully doing it once.
He thought about it. Judging by his body language, when he was doing sound check, he looked and he said, "I'm gonna jump. I'm gonna do it." And so when he's in the stage, and you know when you're performing, you know you're in a moment, like you know, especially if you're having a really good set, you feel like you can do anything. And he saw it. He judged it. He said, maybe not. And then like something took over him and said, yep, do it. And he did it. And that's the mistake that you make. When you do something, you got to fully commit to it. Because the minute he thought in midair, he was like, oh, wait a minute. That's when he like fell straight down. It was like when Homer jumped over the Springfield Gorge. He just dropped. So
your man A$AP Rocky performed.
Yeah, I saw his set.
Brought out Bone.
And New York just completely shut them down.
You didn't like Bone's performance?
No, I loved it. I watched it from my phone. I was out getting to this money, you know what I'm saying?
In these streets.
But when I heard Bone come out, I was like, oh, okay, yes, dope. Should they have done First of the Month or Stuggish Ruggish Bone Cool? I definitely don't do Crossroads. I mean, that probably would have worked.
You could tell that Thuggish Ruggish Bone, that was ASAP Rocky's favorite one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what that was. Can you come out and do Thuggish Ruggish Bone?
And they're like, yeah, man, whatever you want.
Right.
We're available. Let me put it that way. We're all available. We are not busy.
It's stupid.
No.
anything you need. Absolutely anything. Please.
Pretty much. But how'd you feel about ASAP's performance?
ASAP.
He's still got something to learn about live performances. He's not all the way there.
But I think he has potential.
I do too.
He can captivate an audience. He has that, as you said, when we talked about the album. He has a level of charisma and other intangibles for artists that a lot of people don't have.
Yeah.
I think he has potential. I think he just needs to get rid of the 12 people on stage with him and, you know, be a little more intimate with his set.
Mm.
You know, maybe bring Ferg out because Ferg is obviously, number two.
He did. So Ferg did work, right?
Yeah, Ferg did work. Ferg did work a couple times. Ferg announced his album drops August 20th, I believe. I think they did they do the remix?
Yeah, they did.
Okay. So what'd you think about, you know, ASAP and TD and all them being on the stage together?
I feel like that works. I feel like this generation that's coming up now, it's almost sort of like how, like, if you ever watch Inside the NBA, they will complain about this all the time. How this new generation of ball players, they're all friends with each other.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a very similar thing for rappers now.
I agree.
Part of it is we all grew up on
beef.
So people are like, nah, it's all good.
Yeah. But they don't realize that the generation before the beef generation was all friends.
Well, yeah, but
early 90s up until what, mid?
Up until you ain't got to worry about your CEO all in the video.
Okay, there you go.
That was the moment.
You're right. I can't believe I had such a brain fart in one of the most important moments in hip hop history. Right.
Yeah, when we talk about important moments in hip hop history, that might be the one.
It might be, yeah. No. But yeah, I agree. I think the statement was like, you know, let these new dudes in, like we're here. I think it was them trying to make that statement.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? So I didn't necessarily like accomplished it, but you know, I think they made a point to scream unity in the immortal words of Rick James.
And then Kendrick comes out. He did Chick Don't Kill My Vibe, Money Trees, yep. Mad City.
Yep.
He had everybody on stage.
Yep. He did Poetic Justice. He did I don't even think he did
we forgot about 2 Chainz came on.
Yeah, 2 Chainz. I mean, Joe Budden opened the show. We didn't talk about Miguel. I mean, it's
2 Chainz, Nicki, Miguel.
2 Chainz set was all right. I think it's one of those instances. What 2 Chainz did is you kind of don't realize, and Fab does this all the time. Like, you don't realize how many hits a person has until you hear them all in a row. You're like, oh, he did do this. So you're like, wow, 2 Chainz really did all this last year, because these were all somewhat recent records.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, okay, got it. So 2 Chainz set was cool, brought out Nicki, which was obviously going to happen.
The crowd, a little mixed response.
Well, it was because her mic was off. So they were like, what?
Can I just say that, like, considering this is the production values are still...
Still, I mean...
Come on. The sound just wasn't there all the way.
Why Hot 97 are you? I love the fact that you're streaming.
Yeah, that's great.
That's great. Maybe use something else besides Ustream. I don't know. But one thing I don't like is I don't need a behind the scenes with Miss Info and Angie Martinez. I don't need that. I don't know anybody who watches that. Just show the freaking show a recap of the. I mean, do like behind the scenes, but I don't know. I just don't like it in that way.
I would say. I mean, those are personalities for them, so they need to need to push them, right? I mean, if you're tuning in, you heard about this thing because you're there to listen to your favorite artist, and you're not from the New York area, and you see these personalities. They're hoping that a certain percentage of them go, hey, I want to hear that person more often. Oh, I can catch up on Hot 97 when I'm online. Like, I don't need to be in the tri-state area. I think there's some of that.
Yeah, I get that.
So, I mean, back to Kendrick real quick. So, you know, he did like a 28-minute set or something.
He did 25 minutes.
Okay.
When he left off the stage, there was still 5 minutes left on the clock.
That's true.
The story goes that Ebro, who, you know, is Hot 97's program director.
I got so much to say about Ebro in a second, but keep going.
Oh, man, come on. So he goes and he goes to go grab French so French can start his set early so he can get, you know, obviously he can get as much time, you know, get his time in as possible in the event that they get shut down. It was raining, you know, by then it was raining really bad. So in the middle of that, I can't even tell the story. I've been waiting to talk about this all week, and now I can't talk about it. So your man.
My man.
Your man. Who you, Nasarima Dream 2, I'm expecting at least 3 doc tracks on there, man.
For the right price, I can make yo-ish tighter. I believe would be my motto right there.
Out of nowhere, Papoose comes out and he's the headlining act. You've got Kendrick Lamar, 2 Chainz, Nicki Minaj, ASAP Rocky, all these people, Wu-Tang Clan, they all opened up for Papoose. Papoose does one song and he leaves. A Ron Brown song, no less.
So New York. So New York.
So New York.
And then French eventually gets on stage.
No, 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 no. We're not going to skip this moment.
Oh, you want to talk about Papoose?
Yes.
So the story goes, Papoose has known the dudes from Top Dog for a while.
Yes.
And that happened, if such a time existed. He brought Top Dog out to New York and showed them around Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm just trying to visualize this idea. Like, is he like buying them like the shirts with the 9s on it? Like, what is
at the airport with a bunch of Gino Green?
Like is K Slay trying to like get them out, like pushing the street stunting? Like,
we'll remember a few months ago, K Slay dropped a mixtape and it was, you know, it was a Papoose and Kendrick Lamar record. And we were like, why is Kendrick Lamar doing a song with Papoose? Like, so, I mean, there's
clearly a history there, but I mean,
yeah,
like absolutely. Just the visual of Papoose taking the young TDE crew under his wing and showing around Brooklyn is hilarious. So I had the misfortune of watching a recap of the Hot 97 people explain this whole story.
Yes, which was hilarious. The pleas that were copped were hilarious.
Yeah. So they were chast. On one hand, they were like, we can't believe we got up there. But then they're like, oh, that's so hip hop. Yeah. And I'm like, okay. Maybe. And then what they're really chastising him for, they're like, well, why didn't he perform? Like, you can't perform new stuff at Summer Jam. You got to perform classics. Classics!
And what was the song?
Does Papoose have classics?
What was the song that they said he should have performed?
I don't even remember. What,
Bucket Naked.
No, look. Well, what do they want him to do? Alphabetical Slaughter? Like, you know.
Yes! Do all 7 minutes.
Can you imagine that?
K-Slave run. No, no, no. Do Alphabetical Slaughter 2.
But have K-Slave run it back.
And yeah, just have K-Slay come out Z.
Actually, that would have been the better moment. If K-Slay comes out on stage with them and is like, hold on, I need you to run that back. And he's like, and he's just shouting at the audience. And then this is great. They get him on the phone. They're asking him for advice to give to up and coming artists.
And what does he say?
What?
Take what's yours.
But hold on. You're going to ask Papoose to give advice to the youth. Like, come on, man. Whoa. That's just not even funny. Like,
oh, there's so much pain behind these laughs.
Papoose. Oh, God. Yeah. Man.
That was amazing. My stream was going in and out, you know. So
the best part is, like, afterwards the radio people are like, what did he perform, like an album cut? And they're like, no, that's a single. Like, they didn't even know that was a single.
Rosenberg said, yeah, right, that nobody knew. I mean, wasn't Alphabetical Slaughter the single? I thought he would have did the premiere record because he just dropped the video for that. But look at us discussing
Papoose.
What type of record Papoose should have performed at Summer Jam?
None of them. Should have performed none of them.
He just should have came out and been like, hey guys,
buy my record.
Oh, and not only that, he goes into a when I say free, y'all say Remy.
Did he really?
Yes! Dog, I was tweeting you so tough, and like none of the tweets went through. I was so mad.
Because
like,
Papoose shut down Twitter, obviously.
I was screaming. Like, yo. It took me by surprise. I'm like, hold on, why is... Because I thought it was... Because the rumor was... Well, Jay-Z and Beyonce were backstage. So there was a set list that had leaked out during the show that said that Kendrick was going to get 30 minutes. And then Drake was supposed to come out and bring a special guest. So we were looking for either Drake to come out during Poetic Justice or for Jay-Z to come out during Chick Don't Kill My Vibe. Mm. So I think Don't Kill My Vibe was one of the last records that he did. And, you know, my stream froze. So then when I came back on, I just see a guy with a fitted on. I'm like, oh, okay, so here's Jay. But I'm hearing, I'm hearing that. And I'm like, nah, that isn't who I think it is. And then I heard Papoose. And I screamed. I screamed like a girl for 5 minutes. And it's just a great hip hop moment. It was a great hip hop moment. It was hilarious.
It's too bad he didn't like pass it to Ron Brown so he could do a little set, you know.
No. Yeah,
we could have had Pop Champagne.
Yeah,
we could have had.
We could have had Gimme $20.
We could have had A-Rab Money.
Trackers.
We could have A-Rab Money.
A-Rab Money. I'm gonna pay for Ron Browse to do a set at my wedding just for that. I need him to do those four records.
How about Jump Out the Window with Nori?
Ah, five. Yes. Yes.
That's great. See, you like when you're being introduced, you could just have him auto-tune on the mic singing Ether Boy.
I need him to just be the MC at the reception.
Oh, he could just be that's right. He could be auto-tuned introducing your wedding, like your
exactly.
wedding crew. There you go. With the Pop Champagne drums just in the background as y'all like, you know, y'all doing your little Soul Train like moves down, like, you know, getting down.
Yes. Yes. I mean, he shouldn't be that hard to book. What is he doing? I could get him. I'd probably get him for like a stack, if that.
A stack.
I'll probably tell him.
Rap. You gotta get out. That's right. Get out in these streets first. You gotta yeah, grind and, you know, get that paper.
Hot. A little
anything else you want to say about Papoose?
Nah, man. Shout out to Papoose.
I want to say one quick thing about just Summer Jam in general and the concept of French Montana being the headliner.
Okay, one last thing. Shout out to Joe Budden for opening up the show.
Shout out
15
to Joe.
Minute set. I'm just, you know.
You weren't 15. Mad?
No, not at all. I mean, his set wasn't the greatest, but no.
He could have had Wayne on like the projector floating. Like, I think there was a missed opportunity.
In a post-apocalyptic world?
That's right. some missed opportunity. He could have made, you know, got to bring that, bring back the Summer Jam screen.
Of course. Oh, somebody's got to do that.
Somebody Nobody beefs with each other anymore, though. That wouldn't be fun. I mean.
Yeah, you're right.
Unless they get unless they get 50. Oh, you see 50 talking on Twitter like he had the pull to shut down Summer Jam?
No, nobody even the people that I follow, even as many New York bloggers as I follow, none of them retweet 50 Cent.
That's funny.
Yeah.
But so real quick. So the whole idea of French Montana as the headliner, yes, to me, outlines everything that is messed up about New York City hip hop right now. They see him as like he's the leader right now.
Yeah.
Dude did 56K the first week. Meanwhile, earlier in the show, they had somebody whose album also got delayed, who's also young. Although calling French young, I mean, French is 29. You're younger than me. Somebody who's young, who also had a debut album this year, and who sold 139,000 the first week, and who's had singles get radio play.
So you think Rocky should have?
I'm saying that given how New York treats their artists, I don't think that they would pick Rocky to be it. What I'm saying is, if you think of like the rappers who have come out of New York who have been high profile, there's two ways you can do it. You can do it the New York radio way, which is the French Montana way.
Yeah.
Or you can do it the I'm gonna do it my own thing way, which is the Nicki Minaj. It's the ASAP Rocky way.
Yeah.
When you don't do it the preferred New York radio way, you aren't championed.
Okay.
Right? ASAP is not the favorites on there. Right?
No.
Right? French Montana, man, talk about it. I mean, talk about a high profile, just belly flop right in the pool. And I'm sure that French was booked to be the headliner way in advance.
Yeah.
But even still, I think it shows the sort of like insular nature of New York right now. Like, I'm sure if you ask like just regular people in New York who listen to the radio, they'll tell you French Montana he sells so many more records than ASAP Rocky. Because that's the feeling, that's the impression. Because that's what New York radio wants you to believe. Right? They have, for whatever reason, they've decided we're pushing French. I'm sure part of it is, hey, Puff's pushing him. This is how it used to work. But I think part of it is he played the game. That's really, and you know, I'm not saying that, oh, if so-and-so just comes out and sells a whole bunch that you should just blindly like put them first. All I'm saying is, at first it was just Nicki, but we're now seeing other examples of people doing well without the traditional New York system, but not get championed by Hot 97 specifically.
Yeah.
I think that's a really, you've got to point to that and say that's problematic.
I disagree.
Interesting.
I disagree because I would have agreed with you up until I actually saw French perform. French made Emmis a lot of money this year.
He made who a lot of money?
The company that pretty much it does Hot 97. It's okay. Clear Channel, Radio 1, sure. So he made Hot 97 a lot of money this year. I think as you and I have documented, if Excuse My French comes out, you know, last fall or whenever it's supposed to come out, that album doesn't sell 56K.
No, it doesn't. But that's not what happened.
It's not. But so people may not remember the album, but people remember those singles. And, you know, French really showed me like, oh, like to me, French's album and French's everything that he's been doing lately just shows me that the landscape in New York has just changed, man. And I think Rocky, in Rocky's case, I think Rocky is able to do more because Rocky, again, he has those tangibles that allow him to do other things outside of being a rapper. You know what I'm saying? So he kind of has the appeal to where, you know, middle America kind of peeks their eyes up and says, well, who's that guy? You know, who's the guy? French Montana could have done that Adidas commercial. As goofy as that Adidas commercial is, you know, Rocky fits in that role. Like,
yeah,
Rocky
did I'm just imagining French Montana doing ad libs on that in an Adidas commercial.
And right, man. Like, yeah. You know, he's a little slow. He got shot in the head. So he's a little slow. Like, I'm sorry, he is. That's why he raps. People are like, why does he rap like that? Because he got shot in the head. I think that, you know, hearing this response to those records, hearing the crowd roar. Now, of course, Pop That's an obvious hit, as we've documented on the show. But hearing the roar for Ain't Worried About Nothing right before the set got cut off. The crowd went crazy. I'm like, whoa, really? That it kind of just made me show that there's a difference between, and we don't talk about this enough, there's still a difference between fans on the internet and fans out in the world, like everybody else.
That's right. And the difference is what radio chooses to promote and what they don't.
Right. Because if you have a conversation with, you know, it's very, and I'll just say this from personal experience, it's very few and far between to have a really educated, intelligent discussion on hip hop with people who aren't plugged into the internet. You know what I'm saying? Like, where somebody who knows about, not everything, but knows enough to carry on and say, okay, they have an educated opinion. Other than that, as the point that you were making, pretty much whatever's on the radio, you know, not even what's on TV, because, you know, videos are a non-factor. So, you know, video, Pandora, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's just different avenues for people to get music nowadays. And I think it shows with French Montana.
I would say that New York radio's relatively slow adoption of their underground movement that's happening there right now, the Action Bronsons, the Joey Badass, like that whole sort of, there's a crew of rappers coming up, producers like Harry Fraud, who are reluctantly now starting to get some radio play, but weren't exactly what I would term championed. On the other end of the spectrum, you've got someone like ASAP, who I always champion in the show. But if you think of, like, it's funny, these sort of new guys coming up, these underground guys that I talked about just a second ago, they have what you might consider a proto hip hop set, like a proto New York City sound, like a 2013 flip on what you might consider traditional New York hip hop. Mm-hmm. On the other end of the spectrum, you've got ASAP, who unabashedly has influences from all across, right? And you might say that that's a reason why they don't support him, because he doesn't sound New York. But listen, French Montana doesn't sound traditional New York either, right? French Montana, though, he sounds, and he's got guests from what's hot right now,
right?
That's why they support him,
right?
They support him because they wouldn't know a new sound. They're not going to know a new sound until it gets forced on them.
And then you got to look at Pop That had Ross come out. Ross didn't even come out for his own people. He didn't come out for Wale's set. He came out for French's set.
Wale didn't need him. French did.
Well, that's my point. So yeah. You don't close Summer Jam with ASAP after, if French goes on in between. What does it go? Does it go?
No. Hold on. Let me rephrase. I'm not proposing that as it stands right now. ASAP should have closed. What I'm saying is, I'm pointing to this as an example of why I think New York hip hop is in trouble. Not because, oh God, that New York hip hop needs to be the center of the universe. To me, like, they have dug themselves into this corner.
Yeah, dug themselves. I'll agree with that. All dug right. themselves into a corner.
They have dug yes. themselves into a corner yes. where, you know, I don't know. I'm giving lots of French Montana slander, but I don't know. Like, it seems to me that they actually have options now. They have options emerging in New York that they could be championing. Instead, it's French, who he's best known for, like, right now. I mean, basically, he's got, like, he appears on records that sounds like other people's records. And mm-hmm. he's got a lot of famous people on his records.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's really what the dude in your city's known for?
But
I don't get it.
But you reference Joey Bad Person,
yeah,
and Action Bronson. Like, are they making music that a commercial radio station can get behind?
I mean, you could have said the same thing about what was popping out of Atlanta in like 2003, 2004.
But that was what was 2003, 2004?
I'm thinking like a little scrappy.
But that was stuff that we. But that's where the sound was going, and that was something that we hadn't
heard before. That's because they made it their sound. Like, that was their emerging sound, and at the time, it didn't seem that commercial. But it was Atlanta sound, and Atlanta as a region owned it, and they promoted it, and they exported it, and it became the radio sound.
And then,
what I'm saying is that New York will never have anything like that if all they do is trend hop.
Or if all they do is try to rehash what they do, which is what Joey Bad Person, and I don't think
Bronson does that at all.
I don't want to. I still don't think. And as I think I said it last week, Bronson raps. He has a throwback style, but it's not like Joey where it's
Joey's aping it. Sure.
Yeah, like totally. So, but I think that Bronson doesn't have a sound yet. So it would be wrong for me to include him in that category. But I'm not going to champion Joey, and I'm not even going to champion. Well, no, never mind. I'll take that back. I'm not going to champion somebody like Joey who just makes music that just makes me want to listen to albums that came out 20 years ago. Shoot, wait, is that 20 or 30?
20.
20. Okay. Okay, yeah, 20. 20 is right. Yep.
30 years ago, we'd be, you know.
Back to Africa Chains and Hot Top Fade. Well, Hot Top Fades are coming back in style.
A lot of tight leather. I think that's what would have been going on.
Tight leather and Adidas with no laces and stuff like that. Yeah, I got you.
I understand what you're saying about Joey, but I guess what I'm saying in general is, to me, it's just like, not to pick on one, I'm picking on one particular point, but it's just really emblematic of where New York City hip-hop has ended up. I just thought it was a really interesting difference.
Okay, well, I'll say this. I think that now in the world, I think we live in a different world where New York, it's not that New York hip-hop isn't New York hip-hop anymore. It's that New York isn't New York anymore. You know, New York is where you would go to make it. And, you know, you couldn't pursue your dreams from Kentucky or Virginia. You had to go to L.A., New York, Atlanta, Miami. Nowadays, the internet has just made the world so small that you are, you know, 140 characters away from reaching every single continent in every single country. So
that's true to a degree, but I think the difference is now Atlanta has supplanted New York in terms of if you want to make it in hip hop, that's where everything's happening.
But
there is
me,
still something to be said about first New York and now Atlanta being a hub. It's like there's just a certain amount of musicians and studios and labels. There's just a certain amount of stuff in a certain area. It's not impossible to do it otherwise. It used to be impossible. It's just more probable if you're there.
And maybe it's because, you know, New York just kind of sat back and didn't adapt and add their own creative spin on what was going on at the time. You know, you could say that again.
Oh, there's lots of reasons. I don't want to rehash all this, but
okay.
I just thought it was an interesting dichotomy. Like, I'm not proposing that in 2013, given how people in New York and the tri-state area view ASAP. I'm not proposing he should have closed the show. I'm just sitting here pointing out, here's somebody who was successful, who got his buzz primarily off the internet, but then translated that into album sales, who translated that into going on tour, right? But who sort of relegated to the middle of the pack at his hometown radio show. I just thought that's interesting. When he has, by far, the highest selling hip-hop album for somebody from New York this year. But he's middle of the pack at his own radio show. I just think that's an interesting thing.
Okay.
So we're like an hour and 48 minutes right now. I think we're going to cut off the hip hop talk, right?
Yeah, I think we covered everything.
All right. So if you know, hopefully y'all want to stay, but I know some people don't like it when we talk sports. So I'm just warning y'all right now because we need to talk about these NBA finals.
Have to.
More importantly, we need to recap real quick and talk about the end of the Heat-Pacers series.
Yeah.
What was your take on Game 7?
There was a lot of different factors. It made me mad because, you know, Miami turns it on and off whenever they feel like it. You know, I don't think that Miami played well. I just think that when Miami has at least three guys clicking, nobody in the NBA can beat them. And I also think that the Pacers kind of, you know, those bright lights came on and they weren't able to do, you know, they cut off the high pick and roll very, very early with Roy. You know, they kept trying to go into him, and as soon as they go into him, you know, they finally realized that I believe, and people think that I'm crazy, but I think that Roy Hibbert plays really, really scared, and he plays, hey, I'm big, so whoever's guarding me probably can't guard me, so I can do what I want basketball. And, you know, they smothered him. And the funny part about it, and when Miami initially stuffed that plan and they had to go to plan B, they didn't go back to plan A. They didn't, they completely abandoned feeding Hibbert in the paint, just going back to that. They should have like went off of it for a while and then come back to it. And then they had Hibbert out for entirely too long. You know, anytime Hibbert was on the bench, Miami just like took off. The two big runs that Miami went on, I believe Hibbert was on the bench during those two runs.
Well, they got him in foul trouble.
Okay.
Early they did anyway. They got him, what, three in the first half?
Was it three by halftime?
I thought it was three by halftime.
It
was at least two by halftime.
Definitely two by halftime. Definitely two. Because I remember him, I thought he got three and four in the third quarter. And then he got five very early in the fourth quarter.
I think the refs protected Hibbert way too much for most of the series. Mm. If I hear the phrase verticality one more time, and what I mean by verticality is this nonsense rule that apparently the refs have decided to enforce, where if your body appears to be straight up and down, your arms straight up and down, that you can have contact that you don't normally have. Never mind the fact that his body might be vertically up and down, but he's still moving laterally. There was one play in game seven where he made contact with LeBron and LeBron missed, and his body sure was straight up and down, but he was moving towards LeBron. Mm-hmm. How is that legal? Wait, it's not legal.
It's not, because that's similar to the same call that they call LeBron on, right?
The Hibbert got so much, for whatever reason, the refs anointed Hibbert into the you're gonna get a lot of love club.
Because right? they gave LeBron no. I mean, it's funny because when Bron would flop, because good Lord.
God, they're so flopping.
When he flopped, they call it. But when he would drive and they beat him up, they wouldn't call it.
Yeah, I was going to say, LeBron's problem is a smaller problem of what Shaq had. Shaq was so big and powerful. He would get destroyed. People would just wail on him and they barely called half of it.
Uh-huh.
LeBron is so powerful.
Yeah.
He can absorb so much.
Yeah,
that they don't call hardly anything. So that's why when he flops, it looks really terrible. But the problem I'll blame LeBron for flopping. It looks awful. But on the other hand, there's he's getting positive reinforcement for it.
Absolutely.
Like he gets results.
He doesn't have an incentive to stop.
No. Even if they fine him, it's still worth it.
They said the $5,000 flop was the equivalent of you, of a person who makes $40,000 a year getting $10 taken out of their paycheck.
Yeah. I mean, and the problem is that they don't, it's not like they go back and retroactively change anything about the game. If you flop and it gets a crucial call on somebody and that alters rotations and everything else, how much in the NBA finals, dude, people, whatever, write that check. It is all worth it.
Robert Ory.
Oh God. I thought Wade has always been a little bit of a diva, but man, what a diva he is.
He's just old, man.
He's old. He hasn't developed his outside shot, you know.
No, he hasn't. And it's funny because you told me to tell you. You said you tweeted me and you said Bosh should stop shooting. I wholeheartedly trust Bosh's shot way more than Wade.
What I meant by that really is, you know, Bosh is a big man. I realize he's a stretch four, but he's a big man. So when I know he's fallen in love with the outside shot.
Yeah.
So when that doesn't fall, you need to not be afraid and go down low.
Not in this series. I think he'll be more down low against Duncan, but nah. Hibbert was abusing him.
He was, but they needed him.
They needed somebody. I mean, good Lord.
I mean, they brought out the corpse of Mike Miller.
Oh my God, that was bad to watch. He'd make a three, and he would just like crawl back to defense.
Well, the worst was as awkward as watching him in the finals last year, where it was just like, I thought they were going to have to like get like a shovel to scoop him off the floor right. after the game. Yeah. Like he was just, yeah. he had nothing. Yeah. But what I thought was interesting is, you know, the first quarter of game seven, the Heat didn't look great at all. No. They were frantic. And that was the Bosch and Wade quarter.
Well, yeah, because LeBron, and even to a fault, I believe LeBron looked at his teammates a little too much in game seven.
I think he was proving a point.
But he was proving a point.
He's like, you want to complain? I'm going to get you involved right from the get-go.
We're going to
give you all the shots you want. I'm going to give you all the rope you want. Oh, by the way, we cause a ton of turnovers. We wreak havoc defensively. That's actually what the Heat never get enough credit for, is how good they are defensively.
Yes.
But they wreak havoc defensively. And they're still not winning.
Yes.
So then LeBron's like, okay, so can I step in, please? Can the greatest player on the planet please get his? And he has 12 points in the second quarter, and the game's never the same. I was really impressed with LeBron in that game. Mm-hmm. He, you know, the other thing for Wade is Wade didn't have to guard Paul George. Oh, wait, was it Stevenson? Who was he? He was guarding.
He was guarding Stevenson, I thought.
I believe that's that. Yeah. You know, LeBron took that off of him.
Because Stevenson was getting buckets.
Yeah.
Even I can't stand Lance Stevenson.
What is it with dudes named Stevenson?
Why, who else?
Deshaun.
Oh, I don't know, man. Where's he at? Is he even in the league still?
People need to, yeah. He's the poster child for don't go making your rep about trying to irritate LeBron. He might not be Jordan in terms of like he'll bury you, but he'll get you.
There was the rooftop party I was at a few weeks ago. Somebody played Jay's version of Blow the Whistle. I forgot all about that with Soulja Boy and the Wizards, and like that was really a thing.
I forgot all about that. No, you know, I think the Heat are in trouble. That goes without saying, but I think they're in trouble just because Wade better be really hurt.
He is hurt.
I know he's hurt, but he's hurt. He's looking awful. Like everybody made a really big deal about his game seven. His game seven numbers 2 years ago would have been okay for him.
Yeah, but like, no, he was hurt last year too.
I know. We talked about this previously. That's just his style. Like the question has always been, how long can Dwayne Wade go? Bosch, he tweaked his ankle, right?
I don't know.
I think he tweaked his ankle a couple games ago. You know, I'm guessing that's part of it too. But you know, the Spurs are an interesting challenge for them.
They've never played them, and even when they played them,
they never had all the people.
They didn't have all the guys, and they still had to like fight for their win. Because the Spurs are that deep.
The Spurs are deep. They're disciplined. They can play big, which will give Miami problems, because it does.
Yep. Yep.
They could throw Splitter and Duncan out there.
Yeah.
They love the corner three.
Yep.
Here's the caveat though. And I mean, basically, assuming the Heat don't go cold again from three, because that's what that really killed them in the series. They had to stop playing Battier.
Yep.
You know, it'll be interesting to see how many minutes they can get out of Battier. But assuming that they don't go as cold from three as they were in the Pacers series, and assuming that Bosch and Wade can give them something, then I think the X factors, yeah, we all know LeBron's great, but they don't have to save LeBron now. Like, LeBron's going to, and this is going to tire him out, and he will be dead. It's a good thing they're not doing Olympics this year, because he's going to have, at some point, he's going to have to guard Parker on one end and then run the offense on the other end.
Yeah, he's already said that he's guarding Parker.
He's going to have to.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to be exhausted. But he's LeBron. Like, they're going to – I mean, they don't have to save him for another series is what I'm saying.
Yeah, so he can really sit on his behind in the offseason. I agree. I think that what Miami needs to do – I think Battier will be better in this series because he's a disciplined player.
I'm just trying to figure out where they play him. Like, the problem is if they play Splitter and Duncan at the same time, that gives them real problems.
They'll have him at the four.
Against Duncan?
No, who's their – oh, Splitter's their five? My bad. Then they'll have him
– That's the problem. If they go big, they really can't play him.
Then they'll just have to play. You know who they need to? This is what Miami needs to do. There's a few things. Keep Mario Chalmers off of the court.
Yeah, just keep Cole out there.
Keep exactly. Norris Cole is ready.
And give the like. I'd rather than give Ray Allen more run. Like
give Ray Allen more. Because
at least he can shoot.
What's that?
At least he can shoot. Every time I saw Chalmers go on these ill-advised drives, I'm like, oh god,
just stop.
Super Nintendo Chalmers. I say that if they want to go big, I think as goofy as he is, you give Joel Anthony some minutes.
Well, the other way to look at it is, I mean, maybe they just really expand. I mean, they gave Birdman a lot of run anyway. They're giving Birdman a lot of run, but I mean, really, like,
he's really got to show out in this series.
Yeah, he's got to give them a lot, and I think they got to get something out of Haslam too.
Yes,
if they can get something out of if they can get Bosch, basically their three big men have to be like the more they go big, the more they need Haslam to show up.
I take back what I say about Joel Anthony because
yeah, I was gonna say, just
I can hear one of our listeners like screaming at the
you, no, they're not Joel Anthony. Like
if no, they, I totally forgot about Haslam. They're fine with Haslam, Birdman, and Bosch.
Who's gonna guard LeBron on the other side?
Who I think Ginobili. No, not Ginobili.
No, there's no way.
Your man,
Kawhi.
Yeah, but LeBron is gonna torch him, and I think they're fine with that. The problem is that this is not an NBA where LeBron and this was the problem. This is what ESPN was trying to push out their funky rhetoric was, oh my god. Who's going to, you know, where is LeBron going to get help from? As long as LeBron gets help, there's no team in the NBA that can beat them. But
he's got to get help from somewhere.
He's got to get help, and he has to get consistent help against the San Antonio Spurs. Because if they play anywhere near the way that they've played this entire, not just the Pacers series, this entire playoffs, they're not winning. Flat out, they're not winning. The Spurs are too rested. They're too disciplined. You've allowed all those injuries to kind of heal up. So you've got a pretty much ready to go Duncan, Ginobili, all those guys. Parker, his ankle, he tweaked his ankle late in the season. They're all fine now. You really got to come. Like you have to make a statement. You have to do what you did to Oklahoma City last year. They might get game one and you just have to go on a tear and just destroy everything that they have to do. You cannot linger with San Antonio at all, because you will lose.
Yeah. To me, I think what's just really noteworthy about that Pacers series is how little they got out of so many players.
Yeah.
And the fact they still found a way to win. Like, they got nothing out of Battier. Battier had a DNP.
Game seven?
Yeah.
They
And I saw ESPN... Out of their most common, like six of their most common, like six of their eight most commonly used lineups during the regular season had Battier in it. Like he was their power forward.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just taken out. He was neutralized completely, which is why I feel like even though it's not always their style, I feel like you'll see a lot of big, like I think they'll play big. I think they're going to try to force Miami to adjust.
Yeah. Of course, because they're going to see that. They saw that in the Pacers series. Like, yo, not only were the Pacers beating Miami, like they were destroying Miami just from play to play.
Yeah.
Like going big is obviously their Achilles. And you've got better, more experienced bigs and you've got a deeper lineup. Because who does Indiana really play? What was their rotation? Seven players?
It should only be five. They shouldn't play anybody on that bench. Ever. That bench is awful.
But, you know, I will say this, though. They don't – that's not happening next year.
I think people are already giving them a little too much. I think they're going to have more of a problem integrating Granger back than people realize.
Granger needs to come out. Granger needs to come off of the bench.
Granger was their star. He not gets even. Paid star money or close to it. It is going to be a problem. I'm just going to put that – I'm going to say that right now. If Granger doesn't go down, Paul George doesn't emerge.
Mm-hmm.
Paul George is now the guy on that team along with Hibbert. they're gonna have some issues. You know, I don't, obviously they gotta go with George and Hibbert, but and Hill to a certain degree. That's gonna be a little bit of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say he's quite like Rudy Gay, but the similarities between Grizzlies and the Pacers with regards to, you know, Rudy Gay and Danny Granger, I feel a little bit of a similarity there, right? Big yeah. name guy goes down, team does potentially, you know, better without them. Trying to integrate them back, I think that'll be challenging.
I agree.
I think everyone's they've already done the 1-2-3 for next year in the East is some combination of Chicago, Indiana, and Miami. And I'm like, let's just let this play out. Let's not get excited. The recent history is littered with young teams who did really well and then crashed back to earth. Now, they've been building for a while, but they really broke through. So yeah. we'll see what happens. You know, can Paul George handle a full season of teams treating him like a number one option? He's not catching anybody by surprise anymore. Right, there's a lot of little factors there. Everyone just needs to relax about Indiana.
Sheesh.
Who do you got in the finals?
I am still going to go with Miami.
Miami in. Who's got home court?
Miami. I believe Miami does, yeah. I'm going to go with Miami in six.
In six?
I'm going to go with Miami in six.
That means they're winning on the Spurs home court.
Yeah, they can do that.
If it's 3-2 going into game six in San Antonio.
They're not winning that game.
You don't think so?
I don't trust Miami in game sixes.
That's what I'm saying. So that means it's going game seven now. Like, I'm trying to, like, what scenario?
No, because they're not, what is it? It's 2-2-1-1? No, that's even. What is it? How does it go?
Isn't it 2-2-1-1-1?
For the it changes in the finals, right?
Oh, does it go to 2-3-2 in the finals? Hold on.
Yeah, because if it's game six, and they'll win one of the early games at home, yeah. They're not winning a game six if it's in San Antonio. Well, it probably will be in San Antonio, but they're not winning a game six in San Antonio. That's not going to happen.
Oh, it's 2-3-2. Oh.
Ooh. That means they have to win. In order for it to not be seven games, that means they got to win two in San Antonio. I'll go safe and be Miami in seven. They can't beat Miami. They can't. I wouldn't be surprised if they don't beat San Antonio.
No, they'd only have to, for game six, they'd only have to win one in San Antonio.
Okay.
That three in a row is killer. 2-3-2.
That three in a row is killer.
Yeah, I was gonna say if it was the 2-2-1-1-1, that would not bode well for Miami. But 2-3-2 does Miami a huge favor. They only have
six and seven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They only have to win one out of those middle three. Preferably two. But only have to win one.
Yeah, but they don't have to. They don't have to win those two games in those six and seven. Like if it was three games to two, if Miami wins the first two games in Miami and then San Antonio wins the first three game or wins the next three games in San Antonio, I'm not confident that Miami can beat them in two straight games at home. They don't have that home crowd.
Oh, that's interesting. I don't think that they have a home crowd necessarily, but their role players play much better at home. Role player sort of thing. Like if you're looking for role players to come through in the playoffs, you want to be at home.
True.
Plus the refs will be a little friendlier at home. Oh, I need to see the ref assignments. No, because you know Duncan and that guy. What's his name?
The one who handed out all those texts last game.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's horrible.
I bet you he's reffing one of those games.
He's horrible. He's the one who kicked out Cole and the other guys game seven, right?
Let's see.
I think he is, which was weird.
Joey Crawford.
No, not Joe. Of course, Joey Crawford's bad. I'm thinking of another guy.
No, I'm talking Joey Crawford and Tim Duncan have a history.
Oh, yeah, they do.
I want to see.
Now, anytime I think of Joey Crawford, I always think of him high stepping to make that call.
Oh, they don't post ref assignments until 9 a.m. each game day. Come on. Anyway, so you've got, Miami in, you said six?
Yeah, I'll go Miami in six. I'll go back to Miami in six. What you got?
I'll say Miami in seven.
Book it.
But it's not confident about Miami. I mean, I'm making a lot of assumptions.
Yeah.
We're assuming that they won't be as bad. We're assuming that they'll get something out of Bosch.
I think they will.
I think the biggest problem will be sort of like, I think Spo has a real weakness when it comes to Dwayne Wade.
Dwayne Wade? Specifically, take that back. He's a much better coach this year.
I thought he was a great coach this year. He has a weakness with Dwayne Wade. What I mean by that is the coach needs to sort of enforce a little bit of the pecking order here.
Mm-hmm.
But Dwayne Wade is still like his guy.
Mm-hmm.
That's somewhat of a problem. We can give LeBron credit for facilitating the offense, but that first quarter, like those first like whatever plays, those are preset. They went out of their way to try to get a struggling Dwayne Wade, like probably more than they should have, frankly. If it weren't for those turnovers, that first quarter could have got a little out of hand. They were shooting awful. Their defense really bailed them out and kept that game close until LeBron took over.
Destroyed it, yeah.
I don't know. I think Wade needs to just shut up. Like, he's not the guy anymore. But he doesn't know that.
You don't think he knows that?
I don't think he's fully accepted how much better LeBron is than he is. Like, I think he sees it as like 1 and 1A.
Oh, like it was supposed to be the first year.
That's right. I don't think he realizes how big the gap is right now.
Yeah, because the gap has moved tremendously since LeBron got to Miami.
It's huge. Calling them the big three is really being generous.
Yeah.
Really being generous.
It's more so for notoriety reasons at this point.
I agree. But yeah, I mean, the gap is just
got you.
But I think I have high hopes for the series.
Oh, this is going to be a great series. I'm going to be thoroughly entertained. I just wish it was on TNT.
You don't like ESPN's coverage?
I hate ESPN's coverage. Hate it. Can't stand it. I'll gladly take Reggie Miller and Steve Kerr. Gladly. They don't bother me as much as they bother other people. I don't mind Reggie. This may be because I liked Reggie as a player.
He's a little annoying.
So is Van Gundy.
Van Gundy doesn't really bother me.
See, there we go.
All right, we both got the Heat winning. We think it'll be a long series.
Definitely.
Well, let me ask you, if any one of the teams were to make this a 4 or 5 game series, which one would it be? Which team has the bigger chance of just getting blown off or blown off the floor or just imploding?
I don't think either one.
So you think it's definitely 6 or 7?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is this not going to be like last year where we thought, at least it was going to be 6 because, it was the two young guys and all of a sudden OKC just went to hell in the handbasket. Just, I don't know what happened in that series.
If it's a short series, it means the Heat or win. It means the Spurs win.
You think so?
Because it probably means that Wade and Bosch, to a lesser degree, continue to struggle, and they sort of implode. They were sort of in danger of imploding in that Pacers series.
They were in danger.
If they didn't play, and I hesitate to say that they really played well, because I don't think Wade played. I think he played better and he played good.
They have not played well this entire playoff.
Yeah. Wade and Bosch was, he missed, he was, what, 1 for his first 8? I mean, I was just like, God, stop shooting the ball. But you could tell there's some tension there. You know, the remarks of LeBron saying, like, I feel like I'm back in Cleveland again. Or I'm paraphrasing whatever he said. Like, you know, it was
back to Cleveland. He
took it back to Cleveland days. I think part of that was, you know, he's referencing how they changed their offense to be more around him. But I think part of that is, hey, he felt like he was in Cleveland again. No help.
Shout out to Mo Williams.
Oh. Antoine Jameson. Zildjunas.
I say, yeah, I'm talking about Ilgauskas. I'm talking Wally Szczerbiak.
Wally Szczerbiak.
Daniel Gibson, like, man. Those, I mean, I'm tough, man.
LeBron doesn't get nearly enough credit for almost dragging
exactly
so many groups of stiffs through the playoffs. So, yeah.
Yeah. Those clear. I mean, no, but you know, that, I mean, that's the reason why I'm a Miami fan now. It's not because I got excited because three great players came together. It's because I saw what LeBron did for Cleveland, the city, and for Ohio, the state, and what their response was when, you know, they didn't reciprocate his effort. Now I just want to see you win because you put that much work in.
Yeah.
Because my goodness, whew, it was bad.
Yeah.
Diss records. It was bad, son.
Anything else you want to say, NBA?
Nah, man, just excited for tonight. We'll say tonight because by the time people hear this,
it'll be Thursday morning.
Definitely excited.
All right, so I think that's it for this week. So thank you everybody for listening. Next week, you know, I don't know. We'll talk about if we get some leaks. We'll be talking about that. Otherwise, we'll find something. But you know, thank you all for tuning in. ClackRadioSpeakers.com, Facebook.com/ClackRadioSpeakers. As always, use the hashtag. Tell us if we're wrong. Tell us you hate the NBA coverage or you love it. You know, talk to us about Summer Jam. All that. Use the hashtag ClackRadioSpeakers. Hit us up on Twitter. Check out the radio show. I'm assuming all these records that we talked about, you're probably going to hear a lot of them. And you got anything else to add, man?
Nah, man. Great episode. See y'all next week.
This is Kairos.com. That's what you're supposed to say. See y'all next week. Appreciate it.